Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Thanks for joining us at the Shame-Free Zone. This is Veronica Monet, your host, and I am delighted to tell you I've got a really special show for you tonight. I am going to do on the air what it is I do over the telephone. And I've actually had some difficulty describing that. I've called it professional advice for the want of a better word, but consulting, I suppose. I don't know. Whatever you call it, I got to be careful that in California I don't call it therapy. California's got some really strict laws around languaging. But anyway, whether you want to call it coaching or professional advice, I work with men, women, and couples over the phone day in and day out every week. It's work that I absolutely adore and love. And a lot of people come to me with questions about sex, dating, romance, relationships. And oftentimes that actually leads into a lot of stuff around boundaries and anger management, things you might think have nothing to do with dating. Joining me tonight is a young man. He's a college student, and his name is Francisco. And I believe you're calling from Florida, right, Francisco?
That is correct, Miami, Florida.
Awesome. What's the weather like there in Miami today? You guys being inundated with thunder and lightning, or...?
Actually, it was pretty hot all day today. It's supposed to be the winter, and it's hot every day. It's kind of funny.
Wow, I'm jealous. over here in Tahoe, we got snow, but actually most of the snow melted. But just up the road, there's plenty of it. So I think you wanted to kick off tonight's discussion with a question about bonobos. Is that right?
That is right. I attended your lecture about this time last year. After taking the lecture, I never kind of saw sexuality ever the same way again. I don't think anyone that meets you probably sees the same way as sexual the same way again. So my question was...
I think that's a compliment.
Yeah, it is. It is a compliment. It's a compliment. Yeah, I just wanted to see. I know that you're the forever optimist kind of personality, but... how I see was that what I took from your lecture was that, well, essentially that we're genetically closer to the bonobo, that at heart we want to exhibit the bonobo sexual structure, but along the way we have socially adapted to the dominant alpha male chimpanzee kind of sexual behavior. And my question was, are humans doomed to forever kind of be that way? It seems that more and more women to respond to almost aggression. The male kind of running joke is that all nice guys finish last and women date assholes, so it's kind of almost perpetuating. So certain people kind of feel the self-liberating, kind of release the social pressures of society and can live the bonobo type, but are we going to perpetuate into a more bonobo-like culture in the future, or are we taking that sharp end towards the chimpanzee and kind of keep on going that way?
Well, Francisco, you know, I'm not a psychic or a fortune teller, so it's hard to say. I could tell you, I am a hopeful person. Otherwise, I wouldn't be, continuing to lecture and write about these topics. I just came back from Yale University, and I was really very hopeful. I was speaking to a room full of law students, they're graduate students, and it was a self-selected group of people who really want to change the world for the better, but they seemed really on board for this something. I just introduced this brand new topic, and I call it your sexual bill of rights. A lot of people here in the United States, we really champion our freedoms. We're so grateful that we have a freedom to assemble, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and freedom to worship, you know, any way we choose. But there's absolutely nothing in the Constitution that guarantees our right to be sexual creatures. And that's why we have, things like just as recently as 2003, the Supreme Court had to rule that it was okay for two gay men to have sex with each other in the privacy of their own bedroom. This is just ridiculous that we're even having conversations like this in the 2000s, but that was Lawrence versus Texas in 2003. So we're hoping that with rulings like that, we're going to move more and more in the direction of sexual freedom. But, you know, this whole idea of the dominant male, you know, it may sound like it's one topic, and in fact, in a lot of ways it is, but it's also really complex. There's a lot of layers to this. So, like in the chimpanzee, which we're also very closely related to the chimpanzee, but some scientists think we're more closely related to the bonobo. And for our listeners, the bonobo looks just like a chimpanzee unless you train yourself to look for the differences. Bonobos actually walk a little more upright. Their arms and legs are a little bit longer. They're just slightly smaller than the chimpanzee. And their hair parts in the middle, so they look a little funny because their hair parts in the middle. But they're a very sexual creature. They have a lot of indiscriminate sex constantly, and this seems to be one of the ways that they cope with their aggressions. And then they also place a lot of emphasis on female authority. So it's not like it's a matriarchy. The females are not dominating the males, but they do have a balancing effect on the authority of males so that the males are not dominant. They do compete for authority amongst themselves. There's still a lot of jockeying for position with males. There's still sexual dimorphism, which means that females are smaller than males. But because of the fact that the grandmothers have sex with each other and form these really strong emotional ties to each other, they kind of have each other's back. So if a male tries to dominate a female, he's going to have an entire group of females down on him for it. And this basically sets up with checks and balances so that the male authority doesn't get overwhelming and become oppressive. Now, if as long as we are adhering to the idea that sex is dirty, taboo, dangerous, then we're kind of bolstering the male authority, because that these two travel together. It's only in matrifocal societies where you see promiscuity embraced. In patriarchies, if they're really, you know, extreme patriarchies, then you'll wind up with something like honor killing, where the females are actually murdered for being promiscuous. And then in our culture, you know, it's a little less extreme. I personally think it's still quite obscene, but you know, we will put the rape victim on trial to try to, you know, tell her she's got to defend her honor. There is basically this assumption that quote-unquote good women deserve to be protected, whereas quote-unquote loose women get whatever they ask for. These things actually tie into making the bad boy a more attractive persona than you know, maybe somebody who's not violent and not abusive. And I'm wondering, I want to take a little pause here, Francisco, and just ask you if that connection seems obvious, or, you know, if you have some questions about that. Why would patriarchal structures and, you know, sex is taboo lead to women being attracted to bad boys?
Well, it seems that in a male alpha male kind of dominated society, and if you look at chimpanzee social and sexual structure, it seems that women are feared and beat down into almost a submission to submit to the males. And I was looking at a page in your book and how your parents told you to follow that same submissive type. So it seems that humans have kind of evolved into that same kind of mentality. And I look back into part of history. I took a Latin American history class, and in one of the papers I was reading was actually a court order about how it was actually legal for males to kill their wife if they caught them cheating, but it had to be immediately. And if they waited too long, they were going to lose their honor and couldn't do it. So these things seem like that because for so long that women feel they have to play into a submissive role, that they need an aggressive man to feel almost a part of that. It sounds bad, and I don't want to believe in that, but it just seems like this, the signs kind of keep pointing towards that. The women almost need to almost feel that way, to feel that depression.
That's an interesting thing with the chimpanzee. The chimpanzee male competes for sexual favors, and they have some promiscuity, but it's just like in our culture, it's a really dangerous proposition. The female may decide that she really wants to have a sexual relationship with a male who has not achieved dominant status in the troop. And so she will be sneaking around, basically having an affair. And if she gets caught doing this, certainly she and her co-conspirator are going to get beaten. It very rarely leads to their murder, however. But the resulting child, the baby that comes from this union, will be killed. And so in chimpanzees, we find that we've got infanticide, rape, murder, and war, which are really, you know, four of the most egregious forms of violence that the human being suffers from as well. What's interesting about the mating of the chimpanzee is a lot of times about 2 to 4 weeks before the female goes into estrus, which is where she would actually agree to copulate, the male that has decided he wants to have sex with her and father her child will start beating her. And these beatings will become more and more sadistic the closer she goes into heat. So that by the time she's gone into heat, she will not agree to have sex with anybody but him. Now, obviously, that's not a foolproof system, but it really does speak a lot to, you know, what we have in human culture with domestic violence and, you know, the battered women syndrome, where, you know, you batter a woman enough and she will basically become very loyal.
Yeah.
Because she's terrified to deviate from that.
Yeah.
I think that we have more of that dynamic going on in relationships where, you know, sometimes when you see a woman who has married herself, whether literally or metaphorically, to a man who is a quote-unquote bad boy, that she might be responding to that same kind of dynamic, which is she identifies with her perpetrator.
And this kind of leads into my next question, is that I kind of feel like I'm a bonobo in a chimpanzee world. You mean, how I feel is like I want to treat women the how I feel like I would want to be treated. I want to be honest, free loving, simple, and simplicity, not trying to always have to feel like I'm living up to this, alpha male. You mean, that I kind of can't give in because she's going to see me as a pushover, or I can't show emotion because she's going to think I'm giving in and she's going to shy away, you know what I mean? And I've had one particular girl for a very long time ago, but I kind of always think about it and laugh to myself that as soon as I fought with her, she kind of almost turned away and started looking to someone else. And I looked at her family dynamics and her mother and father constantly fought. So it kind of seemed like association with relationships was that you have to fight to be in a relationship. And that's just one kind of extreme end, but I kind of feel like I want to treat women the kind of the way I would want to treat I would want to feel treated, not give show emotion, signal, you mean, just be clear and concise. But if I feel like if I do that, I will be kind of losing their interest because I'll be considered a bonobo, and they're more, that woman is kind of living that submissive role of the chimpanzee world.
Yeah, we've eroticized our roles. Our gender roles have become very eroticized, and it's difficult. People get pretty well set on what they're going to find sexy by the time they're about 4 years old. So for instance, if a young 4-year-old sees his mom wearing maybe some lingerie or something, and it's all by accident, the bathroom door is ajar, or he walks in on her bedroom or something, and he gets a glimpse of a particular type of lingerie or clothing, it's really common for a child of that young of an age to get fixated on that, so that later on in life, that will be the thing that turns them on. And I think similarly that we get imprinted, if you will, kind of a misappropriation of terms because only animals like geese imprint, but we'll use it metaphorically here, that humans will get imprinted by particular gender relationships and, might try to move out of that. You know, I'll date men from other cultures, somebody completely different than my dad, and then still find that is like the dominant theme when you get ready to make it a permanent relationship, like maybe get married, which is oftentimes children grow up to marry people just like mom and dad. So this stuff can get handed down from generation to generation. And then, of course, there's the matter of one's peer group. You know, people are really like apes in this respect. They care so much about what the rest of the apes think. So if your friends think that your boyfriend is, not a man, whatever that means, then you might feel self-conscious and you want him to have some outward proof that he was worthy of your affections. And these standards are really based upon what does the rest of my social group think. You know, what are the rest of my girlfriends dating? What kind of people are they going out with?
That's funny because I have like a running theory of my own that it sounds bad, but that women get boyfriends the same reason why they get expensive Gucci bags, just to kind of throw on their shoulder and show off to their girlfriends. Not really for the relationship, but for the showing off to other people. I mean, it kind of seems like what you're explaining is that that because through socialization and social pressure of everyone looking around, they're looking for not really an enjoyable relationship, but actually trying to adhere to social norms and social pressures.
Are you familiar with dog behavior at all?
I'm sorry?
Dogs. Do you spend much time around dogs?
I have two dogs myself. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you ever take your dogs to the dog park and see how all the dogs want to try to figure out who's going to jump on who?
I think you mentioned a certain story of your own, how one of your own dogs had sex with another one and came right back to you for almost approval, which seems like there's like the same thing in human behavior.
Well, actually, in her case, I think that the idea of being penetrated was just so emotionally overwhelming for her that she was having a hard time processing it, which blew my mind because I thought animals just mate. You know, I didn't realize they had all these emotions. Mm-hmm. But I don't know why I didn't realize that. It's so silly that people talk about animals, oh, I wonder if they have feelings. I mean, that's pretty much all they do. They don't have the cerebellum in front, like moderating those feelings and trying to decide for them whether or not they're going to have a logical moment. They are pure emotion. But actually what I was thinking about was how dogs posture for social clout by deciding, oh, I'm going to get on top of you. And it's like, oh, no, you're not. You're not going to hump me. I'll hump you. So they kind of compete that way. When I was working as an escort, one of the things that really struck me about not all my clients, but a certain percentage of my clients, was that they weren't really concerned about having a good time sexually so much as they wanted to prove themselves. You know, they wanted to make sure that they were desirable or successful, whatever that meant to them. But it was such a marked behavior pattern that I began to think that men in general, not you specifically, not anybody specifically who's listening tonight, but just in general, there tends to be this audience in people's heads. So whether they're men or women, But in my case, of course, I was seeing male clients. The emphasis was more on, what does this say about me? Am I sexy? Am I successful? Am I attractive? Am I desirable? Which is far outside the realm of actually enjoying the sex act. And I think that culturally we are at a point where the sex act has so many other implications that people really can get focused on that, and they may say, well, you know, I just wanted to have sex, but that's very rarely the truth. It is very rarely the truth that anybody just wants to have sex. Usually they are looking to somehow or another feel a certain way about themselves. And that's like the overarching reality that I find about people, that people have sex to make themselves feel a certain way about themselves. And it might make them feel really popular. It might make them feel like a rebel. It might make them feel loved and accepted. It could make them feel safe. But it's still about creating this feeling that's actually separate from the sex act. Does that resonate with you at all?
Yes and no. I don't think maybe my particular case is like that, because I don't know, because I want, for me, I'm trying to squeeze the most out of life. And I've had some very good sexual partners, and it's the most liberating feeling. It's almost intoxicating, and I kind of almost want to get that. I feel like I'm losing a little bit of life. I'm losing time, and the fact that not living, having this emotion is kind of feeling almost a big empty void in my life that it's kind of those one part of my life that I can't have answers for, is, and I don't have feel like to have control over it. So it kind of bottles up in amount of anxiety, which kind of leads me into like a couple other concerns I have for myself. That I just have a lot of I think pent up anxiety that for women. I remember after I spoke with you last week, it was ironically the next day. I found myself a little bit picky when it comes to women and trying to take the first steps and try to securing a relationship. And I finally met someone that I felt she was like-minded, and I felt like I had not really such a connection to, but I felt I liked her, who she was, and that she's pretty, and I enjoyed that.
Francisco?
Yes.
Francisco?
Hello?
Yeah, I think you might be moving around because you're getting real animated, and I understand this is a very emotional topic, but we're losing your telephone connection.
Okay, can you hear me now?
I can hear you great, so you might want to try to stay in that position if possible.
Sorry about that. Where did you lose me?
That's okay. You're talking with your hands, obviously.
Okay, but...
So you met somebody that you thought you might actually like to have sex with, is what I heard.
Yeah, in short, basically, yes. But I almost didn't even like the fact that I found somebody that I liked, because my anxiety was so high, almost uncontrollably. I felt it in my stomach, in my gut, and I felt my thoughts and my insecurities were just racing out of control, and I had no grip on it. I look at my father's side of the family, and anxiety plagues them to the point of they're super analytical, indecisive, to the point of almost paralyzing. And normally I'm not like this at all, but when the emotion came up with maybe potentially finding something I might truly like, it just raced out of control. I didn't even want to think about it anymore. I closed it off, and it seems like I'm more willing to just shut that off than to kind of confront it. The kind of insecurities were eating me alive. I did rather not kind of confronting that.
So let's talk about those insecurities for a minute. Were you able to pinpoint what you were feeling insecure about?
I think two things. One thing, that I'm jobless right now and I'm living at my parents' house. I'm a young guy. I'm going to school. I'm looking for a job, but most of the women I tend to gravitate towards tend to be slightly older, a little more toward my age, but when 23, 24 years old, don't want a guy that's living at home and not with no job. So it's kind of this weird thing. And like, I don't really feel like I connect with younger women. and I'm kind of like in this weird limbo. I'm waiting to kind of be secured in my own life so I can attract women that that I like myself. But in the meantime, I don't know what to do. Should I kind of willing to kind of curb my pickiness to try to secure someone that's a little older that might not initially perceive that I might like, or kind of suck it up for a while and wait till I'm secure and look for someone?
Well, before I answer your question, and I'll probably try to help you answer it yourself, but before we do that, let's just backtrack for a little minute, because I want to try to bring a couple of things to your attention. You know how I was saying that sex is a really loaded thing for people, that it's not so much about the sex as it is about what does it mean about me, how popular am I, how important am I, how accepted am I. And really, you're just illustrating this point by talking about the fact that you're living with your parents and not really happy about your living circumstances. And not so much that you didn't really indicate to me that you don't find these particularly attractive features, but that you're concerned that the older women that you're attracted to aren't going to find it acceptable, your living circumstances. Would you say that's a fair assessment of what you just stated?
Yeah, I don't necessarily, like right now, in the circumstances, it's not necessarily I feel bad about it, is that I think the partners that I'm going to attract, they're going to shy away from that.
Right.
So
the thing, if you were really living among bonobos, nobody'd care. Nobody would care.
Right.
Here's the difference between chimpanzees and bonobos. Now, a female bonobo, I saw this on TV one time. It was just in stark contrast to anything you would ever expect a chimpanzee to do. The bonobo female had a baby on her back. She was just walking around, and she spotted from a distance a male who was laying in an inclined position and had an erection. And she apparently decided she wanted to go interact with that erection, so she just walked over and sat down on him and thrust it away a couple of times, was satisfied, and walked away. Now, that's very different than, you know, beating your potential sexual partner for 4 weeks before you have intercourse with her, or, you know, beating the other males that might try to have sex with her, or, you know, worrying about whose baby it is and whether or not you're going to kill it. So we have, as humans, gone off in this direction where we've embedded a lot of other meaning to our sex, and it really has so much more to do with jockeying for social position. And this is one of the things that I have noticed about, and maybe you noticed this in college, I certainly noticed it in college, that people were very intent upon going out with other people who would give them more status on campus.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that was because of the way they looked or who their parents were or how much money they had or what kind of a car they drove, I saw it with both males and females that they picked their sexual partners based upon what it meant about them socially. Now, getting drunk at a frat party and falling into bed with somebody where nobody knows about it, that's a totally different thing. But trying to actually go out with somebody where people would see you out on a date where you might be seen in public, I noticed that people invested way more time and energy into what does this mean and are these people good enough, you know. I had a girlfriend who was on the track team at my university, and because of her race, men would meet with her in her dorm room to have sex with her, but they wouldn't take her out for lunch or dinner. So, and you know, we're laughing about it. It's not funny at all. It's racist as hell. But, you know, this was 1982.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hopefully things have progressed, but, you know, it depends on what part of the country you're in. But I mean, the fact, see how complicated it is that you have to worry about whether or not you've got a car or a job, and most people
right.
will say, well, of course, you know, I'm not going to go out with some guy who doesn't have those things.
And for me, I really don't care about what other people think. I'm not looking for social norms. I'm not trying to dogfight for other people's composition. I'm really more internalized and have my own focus and my own goals. So when I see a woman kind of living in this world of expectations and what other people's pressures, it's really like a complete turnoff. I mean, I see them trying, more looking at me like a means to secure status, not so much to that extent, but the same kind of way you're going to the frat parties and stuff like that. And when I see this, it's really a complete turnoff.
And I could totally understand why it would be, but I'm going to ask you to just a little bit here, because if you weren't concerned about what other people thought of you,
okay,
it's doubtful that you would have been having all of that extreme anxiety wondering what these women were going to think about you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see how those are kind of contraindicated there? I mean, if you were completely free of that worry, then I doubt you would have had that extreme anxiety that you talked about.
Well, I guess I just have anxiety for potential people potential relationships. I mean, I feel that I just have no confidence in myself, that fact that they're gonna like the kind of person I am, and I think the insecurities kind of flare out at that point, because I don't have that confidence that they like me. Not to say that I don't like myself. I love how I am. I love who I am. But I just have no confidence that they're going to like who I am. Kind of.
Okay. I believe you. But I want to complete this picture for you a little bit. So let's come in through the back door here.
Okay.
Not literally. Metaphorically. So you said something about, should I reduce my standards?
Mm-hmm.
What are your standards?
Well, my standards is I want to find someone that's like-minded. I don't think I can be with someone that really is on a complete different tangent mentally. I mean, most of the women in my age group tend to not really care about school at all, just club hoppers, and they can't really even hold a half decent conversation. I mean, I like women that's actually somewhat kind of learn from. I mean, that's actually somewhat intriguing to talk to. I mean, it sounds bad, but I kind of feel like all the time I'm talking to someone and I'm like almost talking down. That I don't want to feel that way. I don't want to think that way. But it's kind of, I feel like scratching my head to go, wow, you think like that? And it's I don't know how to really to express like to kind of get away from that.
So this would be, you think, one of the reasons that you prefer dating older women?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Well, that could have something to do with emotional maturity. It could be that women your own age just don't have the same emotional maturity that you have. And, you know, what I know of you, you are a very intelligent, introspective young man. However, you might just make a little footnote to yourself to think about,
okay,
you know, and this fits in the category of self-examination. And since you are introspective, you know, I would just challenge you to add this to your ability to kind of examine yourself. And maybe keep track of some of the internal processes that are going on with you, because sometimes what will happen is that we may kind of have ourselves fooled to think we're doing something for one reason when we might be doing it for another.
Right.
And there could be a chance that you want to date older women because you think it's going to say something about you that feels comfortable or gratifying or safe or somehow or another might stroke your ego even. It might make you feel like you are a good person or a person that you approve of in some fashion. So I would just invite you to, like, you know, entertain that as a possibility. And usually, you know, when it comes to motivation, why we do the things we do, it's not usually one thing or another. So it's quite possible that part of you is gravitating towards older women because you find more intelligent conversation on a level with what you, how you like to think about things and examine things. And there could also be this other element that an older woman makes me feel like I am more special or intelligent or whatever, whatever words, you know, fit for you. Mm-hmm. But if that's true, that you are interested in dating older women, maybe just in part because of what it'll say about you, then it wouldn't be such a stretch for you to be encountering women who are going to be assessing you on the same level and thinking about whether or not they want to date you because of what it says about them.
Mm-hmm.
This, I summarize this, this is an old saying, and I think I got it from my parents, so that makes it super old. You ever heard the saying, water seeks its own level?
No, I haven't heard the saying.
Okay, maybe you've heard this, that the people in our lives are a mirror for us to look into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense.
Okay. It's, you know, whatever I see in my world as far as the people that I pull in, it's not across the board. There's some people that I have, you know, come into contact with that have nothing in common with me at all, and you know, I might find their behavior or their persona quite abhorrent, and, you know, the idea that this is somehow or another a mirror into my own psyche would be really objectionable. However, sometimes what I have found is that I'll pull in people who reflect my fears.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I'm constantly worried that, you know, all people are this way and they're going to do that, and then it's like, well, guess what? I just keep pulling in people who are all that way and they're all doing that thing I said they'd do.
Right.
In that sense, it becomes a mirror of what's going on inside of myself. And this is not across the board. You actually are living in a chimpanzee-dominated world, and from what I've talked to you, I think you really are a bonobo. and you can claim that. You can own that. And at the same time, it's always an and. It's not a but. It's not an either-or. It's an and. And I would invite you to look for the ways in which you can kind of clean up your own thinking. And mm-hmm. and maybe start asking yourself, have I been a little prejudiced? I mean, not every woman your age is going to be a blithering idiot.
Right, I completely understand that, and I'm trying to constantly look for that, but it just seems it's just like wave after wave, and I'm always forever hopeful, and I really don't try to carry all these prejudices. I really do try to give everyone the benefit of the doubt, but I'm kind of leaving my head kind of scratching, or when I do kind of somewhat feel, and the other stuff, not every single one, but also sometimes I do try to talk to someone I kind of find interesting, and they seem, and I do kind of feel like I have a connection with.
Yeah.
I always get that thing, oh yeah, I have a boyfriend, I have this and that. So then that kind of brings in another thing that, I kind of always have this negative, somewhat kind of negative feeling that, this person's going to like me and is going to be free and is going to have this kind of perfect storm and try to, and the relationship come out of it. I mean, it's kind of always...
Can I take a breath for a minute?
Okay.
I want you to take a breath, relax. I want to go back to what you just said. You said that you kind of have a negative feeling that what's going to happen?
That if they, when I do try to see an attraction towards someone, that a relationship won't come out of it. That that essentially something will prevent it. Either she has a boyfriend or she doesn't like me for whatever reason or a bouquet of any kind of reason. I kind of those thoughts kind of run through my head when I do it. So even though I'm still running through the motions and trying to conversate with them and trying to pursue the relationship, I kind of feel like the woman kind of senses that, the fact that I really don't have the confidence that she, that kind of losing that confidence, I'm saying.
Yes, and you know, that is not gendered. So okay. I want to help you sort this out. It's true that there's plenty of women out there that are looking for a particular gender stereotype, and that's never going to be you, Francisco, and nor should mm-hmm. it be, and you don't want to spend time with those kind of women. So, mm-hmm. you know, you want to stick to your truth and be who you are mm-hmm. and not worry about fulfilling a particular stereotype about being a masculine or mm-hmm. whatever, you know, whatever that is. You just want to be Francisco.
Right. And I just feel like you don't like Francisco.
take a breath.
Okay.
Take a breath. And what I want to do is try to intercept a little bit of this anxiety that's running your dating life, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so again, if reality is a little bit of all of the above, okay, mm-hmm. it's not either or. So if you
right.
get fixated on this one thing, which is that there's definitely some women out there who want you to fulfill a particular gender stereotype, and that's
mm-hmm.
not you, and that those women are going to reject you because you don't fit it, correct?
Right, correct.
Okay. But that's not the whole truth. That's just a truth. That's a part of the truth. If you allow yourself
correct.
To get fixated on that, you get fixated
mm-hmm.
on that, and then you're going to be in a victim mentality, which is that there's nothing you can do to change your reality because you aren't that, and that's
mm-hmm.
all these people want. And so you're
mm-hmm.
always going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you've written that script, it really doesn't have any option but to fulfill. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
This other territory that you're talking about where people sense you're not confident
mm-hmm.
has nothing to do with the fact that you're not the stereotypical male.
Okay.
That is just a place where I would invite you to grow and to realize that men, women, even dogs prefer confident people.
Right.
You ever watch Cesar Millan on The Dog Whisperer?
Yeah.
I love
it's amazing what he can do.
Yes, but you know what he always tells people? Your dog will not give up control unless you are confident.
Right.
And he says,
right.
be calm and assertive, calm and assertive,
mm-hmm.
no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So that has nothing to do with fulfilling a stereotype of masculine behavior.
Okay.
This is just a people skill. This
okay.
is a human skill. This is something that we all need to learn, which is to love ourselves and to allow ourselves to be confident enough to show up in life and say, I am a great person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to prove it to you. If you see it, that's wonderful. If you don't, God bless you. Go your way. I will go mine. No reason for me to get an attitude about it or feel victimized by the fact that you can't see how wonderful I am.
And that's it might not come across that I'm not like that, but I can't, how I kind of feel, but it's just that I can't really find someone that's kind of like in the same wavelength as I am. And a part of me feels that it's because of the people here in Miami. It's interesting. I spent 8 months last year traveling Europe, and at one particular instance, it's kind of funny. It resembles the bonobo seeing the erection and leaving, but not to that extreme. I remember I was in a beach party in Spain. And a woman came out. It was part of the tradition of that festival is people you run into the water at least once in the night. And a couple group of girls kind of asked me if they wanted to sit down because they were just kind of soaking wet from jumping in the water. And after maybe 15 or 20 minutes of me just talking to the girl, we started kissing on the beach. And we spent maybe 20, 30 minutes, not that much more. And her friends like, oh, we're gonna go to a house party. And we're leaving. So she looked at me and said, oh, have a nice night. See you later. Bye. Kiss me goodnight. And just walked away. And I'm sitting there scratching my head. It's like, this will never happen in Miami. This is crazy. And it just seems like it's, in Europe, that people are a lot more just socially liberal, and kind of this mentality is running a lot more around. So it's, I feel like I'm constantly wishing that I was in that kind of environment. And the situation here in Miami is that men are constantly pumping themselves with testosterone, and it's not creating a good environment at all, especially for the dating scene here in Miami.
Well, you know, I'm sure that that's true. I think that, you know, things do vary but geographically, and, you know, I have had different dating experiences in L.A. versus Seattle versus San Francisco, and it does change from town to town, city to city, country to country. And remember, that's my favorite word. And there's some room for you to work on this anxiety. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I think that's my biggest trouble area is when I do find someone that I might feel attracted to. It's almost an overwhelming amount of anxiety, and it's weird because I've almost I can take a third person stance in my own mind to the anxiety, so I almost see all these thoughts and emotions run in front of me, and there's like nothing I can do about it. And it's like I'm telling myself, why am I thinking this way? Why am I having all this anxiety? I don't want to think this way. I want to hope for the best, but I almost feel like I have no control of it. I look back to the parallels of my dad, my grandfather and my uncle, and they have the same way. And even my aunt, she's on extreme pills because she has so much high mountain anxiety that she can't live her normal life. And my grandfather was an alcoholic, and my uncle is now an alcoholic. And I feel like I kind of somewhat inherited that high anxiety, paralyzing feeling that I just seem like only kind of bottles out when in a high emotion area, and especially when I find someone I am attracted to.
Well, that could be. That could be. And, you know, if it really gets debilitating in every facet of your life or the majority of aspects of your life, then you may want to see a professional and look into the idea of a treatment. However, what you're expressing to me tonight is not about being debilitated in every aspect of your life, but rather specific to dating.
Right. Basically, so, only to dating.
What?
Only to dating. It's really
great. You know, I pull some of the strangest metaphors out of my butt, so please excuse me.
Okay.
I worked with erectile dysfunction for years, and I can't get a hard on, I can't get erect, and I go, really? So when you masturbate, what happens? Oh, I don't have any problem then. Okay, well then you can have an erection.
Right.
What's your point? My point is there's nothing wrong with your dick. That's what my point is. So by the same token, I don't see that you've got an anxiety problem. I see that you get anxious around dating. So maybe some of the rest of your family's got some problems in that, and maybe you have a predisposition to be that way. I don't know. But right now, today, how old are you?
I'm 23, 24 in June.
I need you to get a little closer to the phone, hon.
I'm 23.
Okay, you're 23. Right now, today, at age 23, it doesn't sound like you have an anxiety problem because you just said, I only feel this way around dating.
Correct.
So let's try to stick with what exists today for you personally. Because one of the patterns that I'm seeing in the way that you think is you have a tendency to take one fact and extrapolate it and generalize it into something huge.
Okay.
So, a series of women have rejected you because you didn't fit a gender stereotype, and therefore you've assumed that all women are going to have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an amount of anxiety.
Well, yeah, that it does. I feel like, yeah, to a certain extent, yes, but I try to always give women the benefit of the doubt, but but more chances than not, I do kind of, it falls into that category. And then when I do find someone I'm attracted to, you mean, I have anxiety that it's not gonna work out, that something is gonna interfere with it, that maybe she just doesn't like who I am, or something around those lines, or she has a boyfriend or something like that.
Right. Yes. And is that way of thinking working for you?
No, it's terrible. I hate it.
Okay. So, and you know how you were saying it's like I can't control this. It's like it has a mind of its own.
Right.
There's actually a lot you can do to control it, and we only have about another 5 minutes here.
Okay.
So what I'd like to do in the next 5 minutes is actually give you a homework assignment. Would you be open to that?
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. So I recommend writing these down because, and you can type it into your computer if you want. Some people will remember things better if they write it longhand. But either way, to make some notes here, you want to actually track the chain of thoughts. So think of yourself as a scientist who is trying to document how you get from, oh, wow, I'm really attracted to that woman, to, oh, my God, she's never going to like me, and I feel so anxious, I feel like throwing up, or whatever physical symptoms come with this extreme anxiety.
Okay.
So there's a series of thoughts that are getting you from point A to point Z. You don't just miraculously wind up anxious. There are thoughts that create that feeling. And it's the thoughts that we need to pinpoint. We need to write them out. You need to actually go in and go, okay, well, my first thought is this, and then the second thought, and then that thought leads to this thought, and before you know it, I'm over here on this thought, and I have these emotions coming up. If you can document the chain of thoughts, the next step is to rewrite them.
Okay.
And literally, you sit down and you write out a prescription, if you will, an antidote for each bad thought. And I'm using that word bad loosely. There are no bad thoughts, but these are thoughts that are not working for you.
Right.
So you change the thought and say, okay, yes, every other woman I ever met in my whole life, except for the woman in Europe, has behaved this way. But that doesn't mean this one will.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thought, if this one does behave that way, this is what it means about my life or about me. And you'll find that your thoughts might be, it means I'm unacceptable, or it means I'll always be alone, or it means that I'm never going to find anybody. And then you rewrite those thoughts. You change those thoughts, too. Even if this woman rejects me just like all the other women except for the one in Europe, it doesn't mean that I won't ever meet somebody, and it does not mean that I'm unacceptable. And really, the best thing you can do is to write affirmations, because affirmations are positive antidotes to these negative thoughts. But you could start off by just saying it doesn't mean that. Try to entertain that idea. Wrap your mind around the fact that, you know, if A, then B, it doesn't necessarily hold here.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, I would recommend that you actually write out affirmations such as, I might be an acquired taste, but I am an exceptional person, and I'm going to find an exceptional person who will definitely appreciate me. I'm probably going to find several. It's interesting, you know, when you're young like you are, you think that the things that have happened to you is the way it's going to be forever. And, you know, Francisco, when I was in college, my first year of college, I could not get a date.
I can't believe that.
Well, it's true. I could not get a date because I did not fulfill gender stereotypes, just mm-hmm. like you. Mm-hmm. I was not living up to whatever people thought women should be like. So the mm-hmm. next year, I pretended to be the gender stereotype. And I lived up to people's expectations. And mm-hmm. I got a ton of dates, and I hated every one of them because they weren't liking the real me.
See, that's the problem. For me, I feel like I would have liked the real you. I like women that don't feel the gender stereotypes and are self-independent and have views, not being just completely submissive and not really who they are. So I'm looking for the photos. Where are they?
You know what, Francisco? We're out of time. I want to leave you with this. I want to tell you something. God bless you for being the way you are. God has blessed you, whatever. I guarantee you, there's not going to just be one woman out there who appreciates you. They're going to be in droves. This is just a stage in your life that you're going through, and it's an uncomfortable and unpleasant one. But you're going to come out the other side of this, and you're going to look back on these days, and you're probably going to smile just like I do. Because, you know, I went from not being able to get a date to being able to charge $15,000 a date. There is a formula for that. Yeah. And why don't you call in on another night, and I'll tell you how to get from there to there. Does that sound good?
Everything, yeah. Sounds great. And thanks again for letting me call in and answer questions. It was very enlightening. And I'll take your advice and do my little homework on top of my thousands of pages of reading and writing.
All right, dear. I will talk to you soon, okay? Have fun in Miami.
All right, thank you, you too.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me.